This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. Thanks a million for listening to How Sound. It comes to you from PRX and Transom. I'm Rob Rosenthal. In coming episodes of How Sound, NPR's Debbie Elliott talks about how she reported the Sutherland Springs church shooting in Texas. Noel King from Planet Money has great writing tips. And the hosts of Science Friday's Undiscovered podcast talk about openings, starting a story. The hosts are Annie Minoff and Ella Fetter, by the way. So all that is coming up. On this episode, something less serious. A couple of fun stories students recently produced at a Transom traveling workshop in Marfa, Texas. The first story involves a horse's snout, a drill, and a few ticks. Margot Wall produces a podcast called Rad Scientist for KPBS in San Diego. Margot's pretty much self-taught, so having a station pick up your podcast, well, that's quite an accomplishment. But she signed up for a Transom workshop to boost her skills, particularly around using active tape in the field, the sound of people doing things. Margot says most of the time for her podcast, she records scientists who don't really make a lot of sound when they work. She told me for one episode, all she had was the sound of a huge telescope running. And for another, it was a large plasma-making apparatus. And on another, a fan in a greenhouse. Basically, she says, I've only worked with loud hums. In the story she produced in Marfa, no hums.
First step of the day, check the pulse and temperature.
98.2, that's good.
Then knock on the sinuses. Afterward, stick your hand up the nose and pull it out and smell.
I'm just smelling to see if it has a foul odor, if it, you know, infections tend to have a pretty nice smell to them.
Aaron Burback is a large animal veterinarian based in Marfa. His patient is a brown quarter horse with a nosebleed. Its name is Bum. It's sedated and restrained, so it barely twitches as Aaron sticks his hand up the nose again to get a second look.
Okay.
Aaron makes calls to people's ranches. He hauls all of his gear with his Dodge Ram 3/4 ton. He's a mobile veterinarian, and his first appointment of the day brings him to Alpine, to the house of Gina Howell. She owns the horse with the bloody nose.
Thank goodness it's radio, because I'm just hardly getting out of bed.
The nosebleed has Gina on edge.
You know, I know he's older, but I cannot lose him.
Yes, ma'am.
Right now. I'm not prepared for that.
Luckily, Aaron doesn't think it's anything serious. The horse seems healthy.
Everything sounds good on him. Got a good ticker.
Awesome.
And the bloody nose? He thinks it's just from dry air.
I think I tend to be overprotective of him, but...
No, it's better than the opposite.
Yeah. Aaron wasn't always a veterinarian. He studied mechanical engineering first. Then he got a job monitoring natural gas pipelines.
I would sit in a semi-trailer and watch equipment and watch needles and watch gauges on equipment, and pretty monotonous.
He quit that job after a year. He went to work on a ranch. He loved the work and the horses, so he went back to school to study veterinary medicine at Texas A&M, where he fell for a girl from Marfa. After school, they moved there and started a family. Back to the horse. Next on the agenda is the teeth.
Oh, you're okay.
Aaron props the mouth open with a speculum, leaving the horse's mouth agape. We peer inside.
See how he's got all these sharp points?
Yeah.
All the way down there? Uh-huh. That kind of poke into his gums, and then it's the same thing on the bottom teeth, that it's just right up against the tongue.
Aaron explains that a horse's teeth never stop growing. They develop sharp edges that snag the gums. It can cause discomfort and infection, so Aaron needs to grind the teeth down. He pulls out a drill with a long metal rod on it.
So this is a cool deal. It's got a little rotary diamond burr on it that can grind on the teeth, but it's easy enough that you can run and it doesn't cut your thumb up.
I check his thumb. It's unscathed. He starts filing the horse's teeth. He doesn't always treat horses. Sometimes it's cows, alpaca, or sheep. And then there are the weirder ones.
I've worked on oryx, the desert bighorns, a Mishmi Takin and a Szechuan Takin.
Aaron's been at it for 8 years, and it can be dangerous.
Broken toes and twisted knees and dislocated elbows and stuff like that. I've got a pinky finger that doesn't bend straight. Something always hurts. Rinse his mouth out here. That's pretty small.
Now Aaron moves to the ears. He sticks his fingers in, looking for pests.
So here, this is why we dig in their ears. That's an ear tick right there.
Round, plump, dimply gray ticks, about a half centimeter wide.
Oh, there's two of them right here hanging on for dear life. You want to kill them, so you just stick them on something. You pop them and you get the little blood coming out of them. Then they won't go reinfect anybody else.
The horse seems to like the process. Or maybe it's just the drugs.
That's a good size one. You gotta kind of think some of this stuff's fun if you're gonna do this for a living.
Not everything about his job is joyful. He deals with a lot of death.
I did have to go down to a place way down south, almost on the river. This lady, she lives off the grid. She doesn't have any power or electricity or anything to her place, no running water. She had a horse that had gotten shot in its leg with birdshot.
Surgeries didn't help. The horse couldn't stand. It was time to put it down.
She wanted to give the horse back to nature after we euthanized it, so she wanted the coyotes and the mountain lions and the buzzards to eat on it.
Drugs weren't an option for euthanizing this horse. An outside burial meant that the horse needed to be killed with a bullet to the head.
So I told her, I said, well, why don't you go to the house? I'll take care of it. And, no, I need to be here. You know, this is something I need to be a part of, and it's my horse. And I said, well, you really don't want to see it. And she said, no, I'm a farm girl. I can take it. I said, okay. So I got the horse where I wanted him, and I have a pistol that I use for that. And We get out there, and she wants to be right up close with the horse. I'm aiming and fixing to pull the trigger. As I fired, the horse dropped. The lady dropped at the same time at my feet. And I thought I had shot the horse, and it had ricocheted and got her as well. And so all of a sudden, I'm looking at her, and she grabs onto my ankles and starts crying, and the emotions kind of overcame her. So it's tough on them. It really is. And it's, you know, I've seen some pretty tough guys shed some tears over these horses, and it's pretty touching, really. Okay, he's done.
How we looking?
Everything looked good.
Yeah?
Aaron releases Bum from the stocks and ties it to a fence. It stumbles over its feet, the sedative still in its blood. It's time to pack up.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
I so appreciate it. It was
you
a pleasure to finally meet you.
You betcha. It's a good day when I get to drive back home to my family and I have all my fingers and all my toes and my legs still work and did a little work, helped some animals, helped some people, and said, come home in one piece.
In Marfa, Texas, I'm Margo Wall for the Transom Traveling Workshop.
Lots of good sound in that piece, right? Margo says after that experience, recording all those sounds and weaving them into the story, she plans on hunting for more active tape and ambience for her podcast, Rad Scientist. This is How Sound. I'm Rob Rosenthal. On this episode, a couple of stories from a transom workshop in Texas. Next up, a piece from Andrea Gibbs, who came to the workshop all the way from Australia. Here's the thing to listen for in her story. Her. Andrea hosts a radio program for the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, but she's never reported in the field. Well, wait till you hear her. Andrea is so good in the tape. The way she asks questions, the way she responds to what's happening in front of her, how she describes things. I mean, she is fully present. Andrea's secret? Improv comedy. She says the trick to being an improv comedian, which she is to not be in your head thinking, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? Instead of thinking about it, just do it. Andrea likens it to playing tennis, waiting for a serve. Focused, looking across the net and leaning into her ready position, ready for anything and excited about where the game might go. Here's Andrea's story.
Is there any chance I could try some on? Maybe not the really expensive ones?
Sure. Sure. What would you like to... Let's see. Let's pick you out a good pair. Let's see. Something with a little bit of history.
I'm with Russ Quire in his antique shop in Alpine, Texas. It's called the Cheshire Cat. There's a lot of things here. A lot. Dusty old bottles, cake tins, black and white photos, and so much jewellery. It's like your grandma's house exploded. His favourite place in the whole shop? A glass cabinet.
Oh, here's some little delicate guys that we can have you put on. So
I don't know if I'm a delicate kind of lady.
Oh, you're...
Russ laughs, but it's true. I'm not delicate.
Oh, those are too tight. Let's see. Ooh, those, no. Oh, here we go. These are handmade. Nothing fancy.
All right, let's take them for a test drive.
All right, there's a mirror right over there.
I'm trying on a pair of spurs. Authentic spurs.
So good.
Like what cowboys wear.
It's actually making me want to get on a horse.
Russ is a spur collector. He's kind of fanatic about it. He estimates he has around 100 pairs, and they're from all over Texas.
You never know that there's this rich history to the funny little pieces of metal that jingle jangle when you walk.
Why spurs? Why not saddles, branding sticks, or, you know, other part of, you know, cowboys get up?
Branding irons. I will help you there. There's certain benchmarks of civilization. Soap is one, domestication of animals is another, and along that same line you look at stirrups and spurs. Stirrups and spurs were the benchmarks of civilization that helped us tame the wilds and expand the way we have. They're also just so iconic. When you think about a cowboy, the first things you think about are his hat and his boots and his spurs.
Spurs are what you use to control a horse. You chuck them on the back of your riding boots and give the horse a gentle, instructive prod or jig.
All right.
Jiggy jig.
Can you just go through what makes up a spur? So, like, things that every spur has.
Every spur will consist of a heel band, a shank, and a rowel. And then how it's attached, most modern Western spurs will also have buttons. That's the anatomy of a spur. I'll show you a couple of my favorites. These are a pair of handmade spurs. Unsure of the maker, but these are large West Texas spurs. You can see how big the heel band is. But what I love about it is that the shanks are turned into stylized horse heads with a mane and ears and eyes and everything. It's great. And then on the inside, someone's written Old Blue the Hay Burner. Just a great working pair of spurs that was lovingly decorated and personalized.
Can I feel how heavy they
are?
Whoa, they're actually a lot heavier than I thought they would be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is why they walk funny, cowboys.
These here are Kelly Brothers spurs.
Russ takes me through some of his collection.
Tons of different ones. And these here that I just pulled out are called cutting horse spurs. Just a pair that someone made in their free time.
The Devil River Special.
Oh, singles.
Russ reaches into the cabinet and pulls out another big pair of spurs. These have a pattern etched into them. A couple of four-leaf clovers and a swastika.
To the natives, it's called whirling logs or tumbling logs. And it's a good luck pattern. But, you know, it's one of those things where people would be like, yeah, okay, I don't know if I necessarily want to wear a pair of spurs with a swastika on them.
I know, especially with four-leaf clovers. It's like, good luck, Nazis.
Yeah, right.
So Russ has a lot of spurs. But believe it or not, in addition to his collection, Russ is also pursuing a master's degree in antiquing. What's his thesis about? Yep, spurs. But one in particular, the Martha Shank.
I wanted to give something back to our heritage and our history here. And I didn't want the Martha Shank to sort of fall into a weird little footnote. I wanted to do it a little bit of justice. Hopefully I'll be able to do that with my research.
The Martha Shank is a style of spur that is truly West Texan. And it's got a different shape to other spurs. Instead of jutting straight out, the Martha Shank curves up. Kind of looks like your heels have two little half rainbows growing out of the back of them, with cool stars at the end. I mean, rowels. And the innovator, well, he was pretty cool too.
Lucio Manriquez, he was born in the early 1900s, and he made his own tools. Sometime in the 20s, he also started making spurs. What I find so interesting about this is that he didn't have a salary. He didn't sell his stuff in the local hardware store in Marfa or in Shafter. Each and every pair of Manriquez spurs represents a one-on-one communication between a cowboy and Manriquez.
I ask Russ if I can take a look at a pair of these Martha Shanks, and he tells me he doesn't have any.
I feel sort of like a hanger on because I'm spending all this time researching and writing about it, and I've gotten to go in and play with other people's collections and document and take pictures of, but I don't have one myself.
Ross has been researching and writing about the Marfa Shank for over 2 years now, and he doesn't have any. That must feel like when you're a kid and you'd go around to your rich friend's house, play with all their cool toys, and then your mum would come and pick you up and you'd have to give them all back.
One day, I do truly hope that that I can get my hands on a pair of Manrique's spurs.
What would you do if someone walked in here right now with a pair of Marfa Shanks? Would you just tongue kiss them and say thank you so much?
It would be absolutely incredible. Even just to walk in to show them to me would be incredible.
What would you do with them? Would you try them on?
Well, of course. I'd have to try them on at least once. They would probably have to wipe a few of the drool marks off of them after I gave them back.
Later this week, Russ has to hand in his thesis. It'll be the end of his official studies. But right now, he's still helping me try on spurs.
So cool. These are the perfect spurs for me because nothing special. Made on a farm.
Is that your story, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
nothing special made on a farm.
I'm Andrea Gibbs in Marfa, Texas for the Transom Travelling Workshop.
Many thanks to Margot Wall and Andrea Gibbs for letting me feature their stories on this episode of How Sound. In February, Transom will announce its summer 2018 traveling workshop schedule. And if you'd like to attend one, put a note in your calendar. I'll remind you on future episodes of How Sound too. But you could also send a note to info@transom.org and we'll put you on the mailing list. Now, on a totally different subject, as I'm recording this, it's Chet Baker's birthday. Chet was a storied jazz trumpeter, and over at PRX, there's a really great hour-long tribute to Chet on a show called the New Jazz Archive Series. Because I'm into jazz, I searched for jazz on the PRX website, and man, there is so much there. I made a note on some docs on Don Cherry. He's one of my faves, and I'll go back to PRX and listen pretty soon. John Barth, dear sir, thanks for taking a red pen to my scripts. Much obliged. Thanks also to WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, the radio center of the universe. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. It's produced by PRX and Transom. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.
From PRX
and Transom.org.